welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio here on Sunday, September 6th, 2020. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor is Pape Machinery.
Hit it, Bill.
Yeah, here we go. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Go by and see them. If you need repairs, parts, any of that, just go by. They're located at 3119, I think I just said that, 3119 Twinview Boulevard.
Or you can give them a call. Repeat.
Yeah, 226-9226, or get them on the web at papemachinery.com. My mind was kind of rolling ahead there, and
Really?
Yeah.
Because we actually made a list of things that we wanted to talk to because we had such a great conversation during the break.
Yeah.
William, sorry you weren't here.
Not that we weren't having a great conversation when you were here. Come on, don't.
Oh, yeah, that did kind of come out wrong,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, that sounded bad.
So you can know. You can find.
I know. I'm angling for an argument today.
I like it.
So back to the point.
Okay, but hold on. We have to tell them how they can find you. We have to tell them how they can find you. You can find this program, the archives, and all that good stuff for the last 10 years at wethepeopleradio.us. Well, not actually find you. You got to go to Montana and then go north.
Yeah, go north.
But there's an actual border at Canada, which is something that we don't have on the southern end of our country. And, you know, that is a huge, huge issue for our law enforcement that you guys don't have because you actually enforce your borders.
Yeah, you do a good job of that. I've tried to get in.
We most certainly do not.
Okay?
Massive illegal immigration in Canada. They're upping it to 400,000 a year legal, which would be the equivalent of like 5 million a year in the U.S. No, they are absolutely swamping the country with.
Are you guys getting it too? Where are they coming in? Just so we can, if we need to get up there, where should we
Planet
go?
Planet Earth. Spin the globe, put your finger down, that's where they're coming from.
Oh.
And the same thing with the wall. You know, I don't know what percentage of your illegal immigrants in the U.S. are not coming across that border. They're just visa overstays. They're flying in as tourists or students or temporary workers, and they're just not leaving. That's what happens in Canada.
Yeah, that's a huge
one. You know, it's not that they're climbing across the border. All that does happen.
Although we have them by the thousands or had.
Back to my point of smart Republicans.
Yes.
In my humble opinion, smart Republicans would say, yeah, there's a problem. There's an abnormally high degree of lethal force being used by police officers. How can we get that number down? That's why I liked what Rand Paul did about the, you know, trying to get rid of these no-knock warrants, although he got assailed from people who probably didn't know anything about it, but it's not going to save you personally in some circumstances. But, you know, start coming up with ideas where you can really do that. Like, I like the idea of an unarmed constabulary, you know, working certain neighborhoods. They can take care of a lot of these problems. Also, you know, that Jacob Blake that was shot, the guy that got shot five times in the back, he was trying to get into his van. You know, if you have looked at the commentary of a lot of the Canadians and a lot of the Aussies and people from other, and they're saying things like, don't these cops play rugby? Don't they play football? In Canada, in other places, there is a presumption that the frontline officer is physically fit, trained in martial arts, and they go in groups. Like someone like Jacob Blake in Australia or Canada, they wouldn't even pull their tasers out. They wouldn't have pulled their guns out, guaranteed. He simply would have been tackled and thrown to the ground. And I watched that video of the Jacob Blake. The cop has got his gun out, and he's sort of tugging on the guy's T-shirt as he's walking towards his car. Just put your gun back in the holster and just throw him on the pavement. That's the way it is done in most countries.
This would be a terrific debate.
Like,
where's
some
the sheriff when we need him?
Always pulling their guns out.
Well, the other part of that story was the guy was tased, had no effect on him, and he had already punched one of the cops in the face prior to that.
A felon.
Nothing was having any effect on him. And so
forget the Star Trek taser gun.
Right.
Two cops trained in martial arts rushing somebody. I've seen it happen many times. They get them on the ground. Like, that's what a lot of the commentary from Britain, Australia, and Canada was like, man, don't these guys know how to arrest somebody? And it seems to me that if you're not physically able to do that, then this work isn't for you.
I don't know, but a lot
of people from outside America looking at that and saying, like,
sure.
Why didn't they just tackle him and throw him on the ground?
I don't know because I'm not a policeman. And so, honestly, none of us here have ever been through any of that training and stuff. So I don't know. We can't adequately respond.
I know, but if the issue is how come America has such an extraordinary, abnormal high use of lethal force by police officers compared to its countries like France and Australia, what have you.
Tell me this, William. Canada, for instance, because you know that system. In Canada, if you are arrested for a crime of whatever kind, I mean, like something serious, are you mm-hmm. held and prosecuted, or are they playing games with your judicial system as well? Because that's a huge factor here. We're kicking lots of violent criminals out onto the street.
Oh, they spend 10 minutes getting signed up, and then they release them.
Yeah. I mean, murderers, rapists.
For an hour and then,
you know, I mean, all these.
I don't know about murderers, rapists.
It depends on where you live.
We have a bail system in Canada too.
Yeah, is that changing?
That's another issue. This is a legitimate grievance in the United States.
I get it, but I guess what I'm saying is, it's an absolute contributing factor. When your law enforcement is spending I remember this was a couple of years ago, and we had, one guy had stolen, it was 10 cars in the same week. So obviously some of them were on the same day. So the police are constantly getting called to things like that. You've taken all your resources and completely diluted them. So they're not dealing with, they don't have the luxury of dealing with the big crimes. They're one by one by one. And, I think in cities like, I know San Francisco, Portland, Philadelphia, some of these bigger cities, they've replaced their district attorneys with people who don't want to prosecute. I think we talked about it last week, Contra Costa County. They're going to decide if the person needed the things they stole before they prosecute them. Because stealing, I guess, is an arbitrary crime now, as we charge it. You start doing stuff like that, you have a lot of people on the streets that shouldn't be there and have no fear of law enforcement. And they do a lot of scary, dumb things.
Well, there's a flip side to this. I think that bail reform is a legitimate grievance. Once again, it's getting exploited. And once again, there's no easy solution to this. But right now, in the USA, there's 700,000 people sitting in county jails because they can't afford bail. Oddly enough, the person who wrote eloquently about this is a man called Conrad Black. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. He used to own half the newspapers in Canada. Hmm. And then he went down to Chicago and he defrauded a whole bunch of investors in some sort of scheme he was planning. And apparently they have laws against that down there. He got locked up in jail. Of course, he always said that he was innocent. But while he was there, he got to talk to a lot of U.S. inmates. And he came convinced that we sort of have a similar thing in Canada that I am aware of. It turns into a guilty plea machine. If you're too poor to make bail, and this is like a third of the population, you are going to sit in that county jail until you plead guilty. And they've almost got a 99% guilty rate in some of these states. You know, a middle-class person gets arrested for a small amount of possession of dope, gets into a domestic dispute, what have you. He's in and out in less than 24 hours. But to a lot of other people, the moment you're arrested, you might as well be convicted at that point because you're going to sit in jail until you plead guilty. And every time you have a court appearance, they're going to be telling you, look, man, just plead guilty. We'll let you go today. So these people are fundamentally being denied their habeas corpus rights. And it also ties into why they always run away. You know, if the criminal thinks, oh, I'm just going to be in jail for 24 hours, I'm going to have my day in court, I'm going to be able to confront my accuser in an open court, he might be willing to be arrested and taken in.
No, but that kind of blows up when you do the research on it, because in California they blew up bail, they have blown up bail in lots of places where these people are still running from the police, trying to grab their weapons, all that kind of stuff. I think you'll find that you do have a lot of places that still do have bail, but a lot of the ones that are having these kinds of crimes got nothing to do with it. They're still fleeing from the police because they're criminals. And I can hear our former sheriff, he's like, you know, if you watch Cops, like two episodes, you'll see what we deal with all day. They're not, this isn't, you know, they aren't the brightest bulbs on the tree necessarily. and they make bad decisions, which is how they get in these positions. Like, I know that if I do these things, I'm going to jail, so I don't do them. And I think that information is available to everyone. These are actually choices.
This isn't about getting convicted. I mean, a lot of people, whenever there's a fight, I mean, there's two sides to the story. And a lot of these crimes, like possession of dope, it's a very fine line between possession and possession for the purpose of trafficking.
Sure.
Because quite often there's an issue about who exactly was in possession of the dope. But you've got about a third of the population now. The moment you're charged, that might as well be a conviction, because you are going to sit in the jug until you plead guilty. You're undermining the criminal justice system.
No, I agree. I think there's a fair amount of that that goes
on. It depends, but I think everyone also knows, I mean, there's a universal truth. If the police tell you to stop doing stuff, that's not the court system. You don't adjudicate crimes with the police. This, you know, you do that after
the... So you've created a culture where you know that, you know, getting arrested for a small amount of dope doesn't mean I'm going to be in jail for 24 hours and I'm going to have a day, you know, to be able to plead mercy in front of a judge. There's a big chunk of the population, it's deeply ingrained in their culture now. You might as well run. There's no penalty for running now. You're convicted the moment you're charged.
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no penalty for having small amounts of drugs either anymore. We've got to take another quick break. Imagine that. This just keeps happening to us. Our guest is William Kay. He is somewhere north of Montana. I've got to look him up on a map. He's in Canada. And he's chatting with us about all these different things that are going on in our world today. And you're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start.
Guaranteed to make your head blow apart. So Robert, that's here in the studio with us, does our website stuff. He was saying that in Canada, I didn't realize this, but in Canada, when you're arrested, you have to prove you're innocent? Is that how that goes?
No.
Are you?
No, it is a presumption of innocence in Canada. There's no presumption of guilt.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is the British system. This is habeas corpus.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, we kind of cheated off you guys to make ours.
Okay, yeah. Basically, back in the day, in the Middle Ages, there was a lot of jailers and dungeon owners would capture people and stick them in the jail. And once in a while, a magistrate anointed by the king, who was supposed to be educated, would travel about the land. And he would set up court in various, you know, districts. And habeas corpus meant simply, bring me the body. Don't just come and say, we've got people locked up in the dungeon. Yeah, they're bad people. Trust us. So you bring the person, the physical body, into this courtroom, and that person has the right to confront his accuser in the open court. And it's going to be a judge who's going to determine who's right and who's wrong. That's what you're not giving these people. They're sitting in jail. And they don't, again, every time they have a court appearance, they're simply being told, well, look, man, if you would just plead guilty, you would have been released a month ago. And it's a way to squeeze a guilty plea out of people, and people are pleading guilty to possession for the purpose, and they're pleading guilty to, you know, being involved in fights when they might not have, you know, been responsible for it. So what you've done is created a subculture who deeply, deeply, and with some credibility, believe there's no justice in this system. You know, the police officer is not supposed to be the judge,
mm-hmm.
and that's what you've got. So back to being a smart Republican. A smart Republican would look for common ground and admit that there's a problem here and would try to come up with creative solutions. What I'm hearing is, you know, how do we apply more brute force to this problem? You know, how can we just, you know, absolutely bash down the people who are complaining about the problem, and then there won't be a problem? No, you've got a real problem, and it's bursting out into the streets. And you're allowing a lot of, you know, charlatans and extremists to exploit this grievance. And the smart Republicans, you know, would come up with solutions. Like, how about a lot more use of those bracelets and things? You know, if you give the guy bail, like if he's just there for shoplifting or possession of dope, okay, we're going to give you bail this time. You got to wear this bracelet. Like, let them, you know, break their bail so many times that you have no choice but to lock them up.
Yeah.
You've got a situation
they use those. I mean, it's not like they don't. What happens is a lot of our, well, our policing is done at the local level. So you look at a small town USA with a police force of three guys, and you've got to have a whole bunch of people on monitors. It's, I mean, it becomes a, just becomes, it's like body cams. You know, they've got to store all the footage and stuff like that. So they're all struggling with, in the era of technology, how do you grow your budget? Now, what's the thing that all the guys we started the program talking about, all your people burning down the cities, they want them to defund the police. Well, that's going to make all those options less available. Those now become not options.
It's an obviously absurd idea. I mean, you might as well say defund the fire department.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's a ridiculous idea. But that's sort of an extremist anarchist position. It doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense to anybody. How could you actually not have a police force at all?
Right.
But as I said, the smarter Republicans aren't simply going to look for brute force solutions, and they're not going to say that there isn't a problem. They should be seeking common ground, not with the people who are trying to make hay of this, but to the general public. There's right now 700,000 people sitting in county jails in the USA because they can't afford bail, and almost every one of them is eventually going to crack and plead guilty. Sometimes they are guilty. Sometimes they're guilty only of a lesser included offense. Sometimes they're not guilty at all. But you're creating a culture there that has no respect for law enforcement. And you might as well run away every time you see one.
Yeah.
So it seems to me, I know bracelets aren't the whole solution. You know, unarmed constabularies aren't the whole solution. But I think that the smarter Republicans are going to at least acknowledge that there's a problem, and they're going to try to come up with some creative solutions to do it, and they're going to reach out to the aggrieved population over and above the people who claim to represent them. Well, what I'm hearing more often than not is just, you know, we're just going to hit these people with a bigger hammer, and that's going to be the solution. And it is not working. And you're really undermining the basic fabric of your cities here.
Sure. And the thing is, the part that you're going to hear is going to be at the national level. And this isn't something we don't. Let's face it, we've got a big country with a lot of people in it. And to do some one-size-fits-all for a town with 700 people, a city with multiple millions of people, we have a 10th Amendment in this country that allows the states to and requires the states to take care of certain things. Doing a one-size-fits-all federal thing, and that's like the last alternative we should pick.
I wasn't suggesting that. I was saying that people should start, you know, thinking about solutions to these problems. I think the Republicans are doing themselves a lot of damage. They could take away a lot of the support from the Democrats if they would acknowledge at least that there is a problem and start kicking around ideas in a way you could sort of, how do we get the lethal use of force down? You know, how do we...
Well, and that is being done at the local levels, but like I said, you won't see that in any kind of a national media discussion. I know cities and stuff are working on that.
Trump met with the black leaders here a while back and had a big round table and had a lot of ideas floated on bail reform and justice reform. And I don't think it's being totally overlooked. But, William,
I think the implementation will have to be local.
Yeah, I think you have a point. I think we definitely need to look at different ideas on how to solve this problem, because you can't do it with a bigger hammer.
No, yeah, absolutely.
So no, I
agree with isn't
that.
Because it isn't working. So with any, all right. So let's mix our two topics that we started. You know, one that we started with all of our anarchists and that sort of thing with these guys that are supposedly that their focus is to fix the systems. Do you think those people actually care about fixing the systems? And if it started being fixed, would they stop burning the city down? Because I'm seeing those as disconnected.
They have their own agendas. The sort of black movement oligarchy, they are simply trying to aggrandize their budget. And they there's a huge chasm between them and regular black folk. You know, the black movement oligarchy, these are almost all millionaires. Some of them are making over $1 million a year. They're worlds apart, and they have a very mercenary agenda of accumulating more budget and accumulating more resources to what they're doing. Now, keep in mind, the Ford Foundation recently spent $150 million to pay off the creditors for the Detroit Museum, so the Detroit Museum wouldn't have to sell some of their medieval artwork. You know, if you've got $150 million to throw at that and you're not addressing some of the other issues of the black community, that shows you where they're coming from, okay? They're sort of in a different realm altogether. The anarchists and that old element, though, they are simply exploiting this. They've got a very extremist agenda, actually. It is completely impractical, but they are, they think if they can knock out the police departments, and there's something, they can bring the whole society down. That's what they're doing.
Right.
So there's no accommodating them. Like, this defund police is nonsense. And these other groups, you know, they're using this as a means to get the Democrats back in office. But if you know the history of the Democratic Party, and I'm not talking about the ancient history, I'm talking about Biden and Clinton and these people, they were great believers in really tough-on-crime legislation back in the day. And that is one of the things that led to this huge, you know, prison-industrial complex and what have you. You also have to really take a look at, you know, this whole drug war. You know, do you really want this to go on forever? Is this really consistent with the founding principles of your country? Because it is certainly a driving force behind a lot of this crime. And I don't know, what, you know, a lot of these don't have clear solutions, but I think there's a huge mistake to pretend that there's no problem here, that, you know... That,
yeah,
that,
I'm not sure a lot of people are pretending there's no problem, because you'd have to kind of be... you'd really have to be...
closed-minded.
There you go. There were things I was going to say that were inappropriate. I was like, oh, can't say that.
Well, that's not... It's a lot of the reportage. I mean, like, you know, Fox News, and if you get the impression that what they, the only problem they see is the protesters.
Right.
You know, it's not... They don't... You know, they're not acknowledging that there's sort of an underlying grievance that has some legitimacy to it.
Well,
or a couple of underlying grievances...
It might be helpful if the protesters were actually protesting underlying grievances and not burning buildings down. I mean, because you, I don't know where I come from, when you start burning buildings down, your message gets lost. like it's lost on me, for instance. Like, I don't want to help you, and I don't want to hear your grievance when you're burning down my town. I think that's happening.
Their thinking is that, you know, that they are disenfranchised, that they really don't have any input into the government system, and that the only way they can get noticed, if they had a peaceful protest, it wouldn't even make page 10 of the local paper.
And I guess running for office is like a lot of work. Probably takes a lot of time, and you got to actually know stuff, and what a drag that would be. We got to take a quick break. What a Weisenheimer. Sorry, my Weisenheimer came out. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah. But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, slow down. If you're scared, don't show it. You might get out, for the devil even knows you're there. But I still believe what makes a man really has a chance. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything. You've got to be your own man, not a puppet on a string. Compromise what's right and uphold your family name. You've got to stand for something, or you'll fall for anything.
Those country guys, they always have the best lyrics. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that, if you're going through health.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that would fit in a variety of our programs. So often. But it is frustrating to watch these people say that they have a legitimate grievance when they're coming out at night in riot gear with Molotov cocktails. Because it's like, you know what? That's not how you move the needle on policy.
Yeah, you don't get
that. That isn't where policy discussions take place. It just isn't. And they can say they're disenfranchised. Well, I mean, who isn't, right? Get in line. Who isn't disenfranchised at some level or another? I mean, you go to a grocery store and you'd rather have whatever. You'd rather have the hours different or something like that. But I'm just thinking showing up and blowing Molotov cocktails through the front window isn't going to keep your grocery store open longer. I mean, you're going to have to go. That's obviously a very simplistic example, but
well, there's a
you got to go do things the right way.
Well, as we discussed last week, there's a whole other substratum to this movement, which are very radical. I just came across a couple of new groups today. There's actually a whole other Black Panther Party, and now there is a Black Panther Unity Party that's trying to unite all the Black Panthers organizations.
And
fractions of them, there's now dozens of these local groups. But there's a substratum to the anarchist movement, to the radical left movement, and definitely to the Black nationalist movement. That, yes, they're using these riots to loot, to mobilize resources.
Sure.
They're not robbing these stores. They're trying to change people's opinion.
Right.
They're robbing these stores to get the money so they can buy weapons, buy vehicles, buy safe houses. There are some really hardcore revolutionaries out there, and they are not trying to change anyone's mind. They're actually trying to mobilize an armed insurgency.
Okay, and I just wanted to make sure
so
that
their motivation
we actually got that out there because
this will change people's mind. No, their motivation is, you know, there's $1 million worth of merchandise here.
Well, and you can extort corporations to support you because they're terrified you'll burn their store down. But as we've seen, like, you know, Target gives them money and they burn their store down anyway. Gosh, you could have seen that coming. And somebody
they might want to change their name.
And the logo's bad, too. somebody called in and wanted to know, here's the $64,000 question. What exactly do anarchists... actually, it's not adjusted for inflation, so it's really nowhere. It's in imaginary land sometime in the past. but what exactly do anarchists want? Oh, great. I ruined the show.
There's different strains. Typically, they want a classless society. I mean, you can go to the website of Rose City Antifa. They're anti-communist. They're anti-fascist. They're anti-capitalist. They have a vision of a very downsized society where it's basically small farms, small businesses. Some of them are anarcho-primitivists.
What does that mean?
They have a vision of society where there's no hierarchy. It would all be very small businesses, very small farms. You're not going to have electricity or railways, you know.
So bottom line is naked and afraid is no longer a reality series. It's just reality.
I think you're describing the Amish.
Yeah, but the Amish are nice.
They really have a vision of a society where there's no economic hierarchies.
Right.
But it really breaks down into a very primitive society they're talking about. One of the gurus in Oregon is a professor called John Zertsen, and he's one of these primitivists.
How do you spell his last name?
Anarchists will complain about hierarchy, and they'll complain about all these things, but when you really start questioning them about how exactly are we going to reorganize society and preserve, you know, modern technology and modern industry, they say we're not. You know, we really have a vision of a very, very low-tech society, but there's going to be no hierarchy. It's basically back to sort of yeoman culture, except they would be sort of, they wouldn't be patriarchal.
Mm-hmm.
You can get differences of opinion amongst them, but ultimately they have a vision of society that, A, doesn't work, or would only work at a very, you know, low-tech, self-sufficient, voluntary basis. It is really, really impractical.
Hmm. And what's the guy's name?
That's basically that. A classless society, no state. There's no way to enforce any property ownership other than what you personally own, your own personal sort of space. There's not going to be a police force. There's not going to be a tax department. There's not going to be an Army, Navy, Air Force. And you know, how do you stop the neighboring country from just coming in and colonizing
exactly.
you? Well, they don't seem to have an answer for that either.
Here come the Vikings.
But anarchism has been around for a long time. There are some great anarchist writers that are, it's worthwhile reading their stuff. They have some good commentary. There's a Russian called Bakunin. It's worth reading their books. But when it gets down to the brass tacks of exactly what's this going to look like, you're pretty well surrendering modern industrial society.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely. And that and so the it's kind of funny, though, that these guys are called the Progressive Party, but really it's all about regressive and go back to, I mean, you didn't just have serfs, you know, and the serfs had a crummy life. Are they unaware of history?
There was also hierarchy there.
Exactly.
I mean, you're right in the sense that anarchism derives out of a romantic view of the Middle Ages. But the Middle Ages were, you know, grinding.
Oh, yeah.
Of course. I mean, and it's never classless. There is no such thing as a classless society. Has there? There never has been.
There never has been, no.
No.
Not even close.
And the only time I guess we got close was during the plague, and that's because everybody
died. It's important to keep in mind that these people are extreme anti-communists as well. If you look at Rose City Antifa, look at all the, you see, like, pictures of these anarchists. Quite often they'll be flying a flag that has three arrows pointing down. In it, it's pointing down at an angle. That's the triple arrow flag of the Iron Front. And it's a military, it was formerly a very militantly anti-communist group. So they are very anti-leftist, and quite often they will take offense if you refer to them as leftist.
Oh. So what are the three things? Down with men, down with women, down with furries? Or
down,
what are we talking about?
down with communism, down with fascism, and down with the monarchy.
Oh.
Because this dates to Germany.
But the oligarchy's alive and well.
Just after the November Revolution, there was a lot of effort to restore the monarchy there. So the three arrows point at those three. One points at a crown, one points at a swastika, and one points at a hammer and sickle. And these are the three things that they're going to destroy.
Oh,
it is a mistake to refer them as leftists. They do not self-identify as leftists. There is sort of some of them do, but the bulk of the pure anarchists, no, they are quite explicitly opposed to anything leftist, capital L leftist. They, of course, have a great affinity with the radical environmental movement because they've got this whole anti-industrial thing going on. They're easily led around by the nose. And for all their BS about being anti-state, time and time again, they're putting out state propaganda. I mean, they're basically tools of the Democratic Party, although they deny it, but they are.
But they
are quite a social force on the ground in the Pacific Northwest and other weird cities like Salt Lake City, and that they have these large anarchist movements in them. And a lot of these people, they've dropped right below the radar. As far as they're concerned, the whole thing can go to hell, and they're going to survive.
Wow, the cockroach movement. they're going to make it no matter what. Yeah, well, I guess if you look at their little social experiment, how to scrounge food.
I'm impressed by their ability to ride around on the railway tracks. I've talked to some of these people, and they have been all over North America riding on freight trains.
Wow. Well, you look at what they did in Chaz or Chop or whatever they are. I mean, that didn't last but a millisecond, and they ate themselves. So they're a classless society.
Yeah.
They had to have toilets brought in. They had to, you know, beg for kale and whatever all else it is that they eat because they couldn't grow it themselves. If they think they have a vision of how the world works.
They planted a garden, but I don't think they understood it was going to take a few months to really actually grow anything.
Yeah.
They're great on community gardens, these sorts of things. They think they can actually survive on this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They're great at tearing things down. And if, you know, back to the Russian Revolution, you know, the Bolsheviks and the anarchists were great allies until the revolution happened. And then the anarchists started to assassinate the Bolsheviks. And then the Bolsheviks just wiped them out. But it was sort of a thing there. They're great at tearing down a society, but they will not allow any other group to form a government. They're not anywhere near that. Now, I don't know how powerful they're getting. If they really arm, they do number in the thousands in the Pacific Northwest. They could really start causing bedlam. And keep in mind, they have no sense of rebuilding it. All their propaganda is about tearing this down, burning this down, and they think that somehow once it collapses, we're all going to be, you know, dancing in the ruins of multinational corporations. And it's impossible to get them to practically discuss exactly what that's going to look like after you do this. They're not interested in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, kind of a one-sided plan. We've got the party, but no cleanup crew. Terrific. That's what we all need. We need more people who are half planning.
Ideologically, they're no threat, really, but they're amassing on the ground. They're playing on people's grievances. You know, they're playing on, but they're quite fanatical. I've met some of these people, and they are quite fanatical.
And so, when you ask them where it's going in the future, when we come back, I'd love to hear how that conversation goes, because I think we're all the rest of us that don't talk to these people are all thinking what goes through their head, how do they think this is going to turn out? So maybe when we come back, you could give us a little more on that, if there is anything besides just the wind whistling through their ears. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
We gotta get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we gotta get out of this place. Girl, there's a better life for me and you. Somewhere, baby.
Told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along that he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not, don't know. My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined, when out of his sight, to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs or ands or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening. I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
I couldn't think of anything better to lead into that question than that song. So honestly, how do they think this is going to turn out? Do you ever ask them that?
Yeah, well, they don't. Like a lot of extremists, they don't put a lot of thought into what is going to happen after. They're more... And they'll say that they're into the struggle, they're into mobilizing people in the here and now. And there's a phoniness to it, and you always got to wonder, who's really driving this thing. I can just mention some other websites. The only thing I noticed with some of their websites is they're highly professional. Like there's one called the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, and this once again is a sort of, these ones are kind of unusual, but once again, very militant, very heavily armed, intermingled with some of there's one group called the New African Black Panther Party. They're mingled with them. There's a go to the Rose City Antifa website. There's no danger of you saying, oh my God, you get sucked into this thing and start believing it. There's really nothing there. And there's always something suspicious about these groups. I think there's some money coming into them from somewhere that's propelling this thing forward. And they're a little too slick, they're a little too organized to be doing what they're doing, to claim to believe what they're believing. But in general, they're almost a Luddite organization. A lot of them are great followers of the Unabomber. In fact, that Professor Zertsen, who's got this huge cult following in Oregon, he frequently visits Kaczynski in prison and brings back word from Kaczynski to these people.
How do you spell that guy's last name, the professor? That you've referenced.
What's that?
Professor John, what? How do you spell his last name?
Zertsen. Zerzen. John Zertsen. He has an enormous cult following in Oregon. I'll make sure I'm spelling that right. John Zertsen. But once again, he's an anarcho-primitivist. He even questions the development of agriculture. We should all go back to being hunting and gathering people. I mean, it's idiocy.
Yeah.
Terrific. Well,
and
where would he be a professor?
A well-paid professor.
Where is he a professor?
I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. Huh? There's John. He's got a number of books out.
Okay.
He educated at Stanford.
Terrific.
I don't know where he's teaching now. San Francisco State, I think. Or maybe he's up in Salem, so maybe he's teaching up there. But no, this is like a lot of them, you know, where else? Stanford, right? Where else would you produce this nonsense? But he's really big. He's got a number of books out. But a lot of them are sort of along those lines. But they're out there, out and about. And like they can be manipulated too. And they do, once again, there's a huge grievance out there around housing in America. There's simply inadequate housing. A lot of people believe that if you just open up a lot more land for development, it would solve the problem. Maybe public spending is going to solve the problem. Of course, all the anarchists are going to come up with is sort of eviction defense, try to encourage squatting, encourage non-payment of rent, and try to mobilize a flashpoint there. They're looking for trouble. They're looking for reasons and mechanisms by which they can cause class conflict or conflict between the police and the citizenry. They're not here to help. They're here to destabilize things. And their hope is that they can sort of knock out the props of the system, kick out the jams, and the whole thing will come crashing down. And out of the ruins, out of the ashes, this classless utopia will emerge.
Spelled Thunderdome.
Yeah, I think we saw Tina Turner star in that. Yeah, good point, Bill.
Yeah. Wow.
So I've never been an anarchist. I've had my dalliances with the radical left. I was also a central organizer of the libertarian movement for a while in Canada. But the anarchists know it never made any sense to me. But people are passionate believers of it. I think a lot of them were, you know, unable to embrace other ideologies which were prohibited. So they sort of glommed onto that. But they're basically being manipulated. They're sort of the Luddite movement, the anti-industrial movement. It has a lot of support in high places, and they're sort of a spin-off of that. But you also have to realize that the anarchist tradition goes back, you know, 150 years, 160 years. They've been organized that long. They've had their own printing presses for that long. They've been a structured institution in Oregon for well over a century.
Well, you told us last week about the origins of Antifa. Remind us of that, because that goes way back as well.
Well, there's in Germany during the rise of the Nazi Party, the period from the November Revolution, 1918, to January 1933, is the movement where you see the rise of fascism in Germany, and there were opposition to it. The Antifa there, the anti-fascist movement, there were two of them. One was the Triple Arrow group, which was an offshoot of the Social Democratic Party, which is sort of like the Democratic Party, but they were also very anti-communist. And then there was the anti-fascist move, which was organized by the German Communist Party. That has been completely erased. The German Communist Party was annihilated. They were the first people rounded up. The first concentration camp in Germany was for them. They were annihilated quickly. So the group that resurfaced in the 1970s took the name anti-fascist, but there was no organizational connection between them and the German Communist Party. The first group to use that phrase was in Sweden in the 70s, and it sort of traveled around there, but by other names. In the United States, once again, Oregon was at the center of it. The group Rose City Antifa existed before it took that name. It had existed for 20 or 30 years, but around 2005, they formed a group called Rose City Antifa, the anti-fascists of Rose City, and they pretty much set up every chapter of Antifa in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
They are sort of the central organizing hub of it. And just visit the website, Rose City Antifa, and they'll tell you all about themselves. And once again, you know, this is kind of a slick website. They're well organized. They don't seem to have a budget. They're absolutely obsessed with attacking white supremacists. They remind me a lot of the Southern Poverty Law Center. They're the website. You wouldn't know which website you're looking at. So they're obviously being drawn into this really state-sponsored campaign to monitor and control the white supremacist movement. But there's a 30 or 40-year break between the original anti-fascist group, which was an adjunct of the German Communist Party, and these things that developed later, which were not in any way attached to the communist movement. This was exclusively an anarchist movement. They took the name. They took there's a red and black flag they sometimes fly, and they more commonly fly that triple arrow flag. But this was something that emerged actually in the 60s and 70s and really adopted this name 15, 20 years ago. And, no. And once again, that Portland, Oregon, ground zero of the entire America Antifa movement.
And have all the separate branches or organizations of Antifa, are they pretty together on their messaging, or have they kind of split apart a little bit?
There are these factions. Like the group that you might want to watch is that Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement. That's one again. It's an anarchist splinter group off of this. Their messaging is very similar. They all call for a classless society. They all are obsessed with attacking white supremacists. They have almost an idolatry of black people, even though they're all white themselves. They're explicitly almost anti-white racists, even though they're white themselves. Yeah, there's definitely common threads amongst the half a dozen concentrations of anarchists out there, and they all overlap with Antifa. They are basically the same people. There are deep divisions within them, but boy, you'd have to really join them and really go to meetings that last for 10 hours that I really couldn't be bothered to do. But I recommend going to the website It's Going Down, the website Crimes Think, it ends with the letter C, the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, and Rose City Antifa. If you spend an evening sort of surfing around those websites, you will come away with a pretty clear idea, although you won't hear of a single person's name. They are very secretive.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. Who's the leadership? They don't mention that.
Mm-mm.
Zero. You will never get a name from these people. The only way to get the names of these people would be to visit white supremacist websites, because these groups are very busy doxing each other.
Ah, okay.
And mark my words, within a few months, the doxings are going to turn into assassinations. These people just absolutely hate each other.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's...
And doxing is very close to assassination. Like, well, we know where you live, et cetera, et cetera. Here's your photograph. Here's you walking into your house. They're already doing a lot of that back and forth.
Hmm. Wow. Well, so things are probably going to get worse before they get better. How amazing. Our guest has been William Kay, and we love chatting with him. He's up there in Canada in Land of the Free.
Regina, Saskatchewan.
So go look
there
that up.
Well,
Montana
develop,
and north.
As things develop, William, keep in touch. We'd love to have you back on. Always fascinating.
And his website is ecofascism.com, and it's really got a ton of information. And yes, I'm sure we'll chat again soon. You've been listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.